I wish I knew how Jack was.
The taste was so bitter that he gagged on it, but the hands were ruthless, gripping both sides of his head like an engineer's vise. Fingers probed at the angle of his jaws, so painful that Jack was forced to open his mouth. Someone else pinched his nose to make sure he had to swallow or choke. The bitterness had sweetness to it, lying back on his palate like an afterthought, and it was hot. Jack drank and drank until he thought he'd throw up. Just when he couldn't take any more, the cup passed from him, and the powerful hands relaxed. JB crawled next to Ryan.
Going up to take a look at the top of that pyramid thing. We've only seen it from the side. I want to know what's around the back. Whether it's possible to reach the top without being seen.
Make sure nobody spots you.
Sure thing. Just an idea, Ryan. Be back soon.
Huh. Phew.
Jack opened his eyes, blinking at the sunshine dazzling through the curtain of glass beads across the front door of the hut. A black-clad priest sat on the floor by the side of his bed, a frightening figure with a skull mask dotted with shards of broken mirror and obsidian. As soon as Jack began to awaken, the man stood and walked quickly outside. While he lay alone, waiting, Jack took stock of how he felt. Throat and stomach were sore, as though he'd been very sick. The muscles across his abdomen, chest, and shoulders were all tender. But he was alive.
Oh.
Itzcoatl walked in, his feathered green gown sweeping over the floor. He had taken off his mask, and he smiled at the youth.
You are well again.
Better than I was. You poisoned me.
I am sorry, God. It was the only way to keep you safe, and to persuade your companions that they should be leaving.
They gone? Unharmed?
Of course.
What happens now?
Warriors will keep you safe until it is time for you to offer your greatest gift to the people.
Jack didn't like the sound of that, but he let it pass.
When'll it be?
At sunset. Be a neat time. Until then, ask for whatever you want.
Fine. Let me go.
Itzcoatl shook his head, still beaming at Jack.
No, Lord. But any food or drink or the company of girls, all you do is ask.
JB was gone for more than an hour. The sun rose higher, and the forest around them came to morning life. Dean and Doc woke up.
Stands the church clock at 2:50, and is there something for tea?
Doc then promptly fell asleep again. Mildred and Christy also dropped off, exhausted by the long, sleepless night. Ryan stayed awake, watching for JB's reappearance from his recon up the pyramid. The armorer eventually returned, sweating profusely. He'd left the scattergun behind in the bushes, carrying the Uzi slung over his shoulder. Dean had gone and come back with water.
What did you find?
JB looked around to make sure none of the others could hear him.
You think they plan to sacrifice Jack, don't you?
Nothing else makes sense. Itzcoatl almost let it slip out a few times, and only just stopped himself in time. You think the same?
Yeah. If they do, then it'll be soon. Tonight or tomorrow night is my guess.
I'll go with that. So what I found up there could be really useful.
The day slipped by for Jack. In their eagerness to make sure the poison took effect, the natives had underestimated the dosage. Jack, who was less than 5'5" and weighed only a little over 110, didn't have the body mass of many of the natives, and the drugs carried on working well past noon. Jack dozed through the whole day, only waking when the sun was already well down on the western horizon. He was given a feast, but he could only manage some slices of duck and a goblet of water. Unknown to him, all of the dishes on offer had been liberally dusted with the powerful analgesic drug Yautli, as a way of keeping him quieted through the ceremony to come, and as a way of relieving him of the worst of the ghastly pain that he was to endure at the height of the great ritual of sacrifice. Itzcoatl sat with him, but he left after a few minutes, checking that the fires had been readied on the pyramid and the obsidian swords had been specially honed. He drew the priests close for a meeting.
It must be right. It is not given to us to sacrifice a god every day of the week. There must be no mistakes.
The villagers had gathered around the base of the pyramid, oblivious to the proximity of the group of outlanders in the center of the huge, muti orchid plant. Ryan made sure that everyone was fully awake and knew exactly what the plan was. He and JB had worked on it for most of the afternoon, trying to find any loopholes, trying to see how they might be blocked, looking at everything that might happen, for better or worse. Trader used to say that an hour of planning was worth a minute of action. Dean was restless, kneeling with his big Browning ready in his right hand. He still had Jack's gun tucked in his belt. Ryan had the Steyr placed in the leaf mold, close to his right hand. A round of 7.62mm ammo lay under the firing pin. Christy was the last of the four. She sat in the lotus position, her hands laid flat on her thighs, her eyes closed, calming herself with the meditation techniques that she'd learned at her mother's knee. All four were ready. Jack walked through the evening stillness of the forest, surrounded by the colorful masked elders of the village. One of his father's friends, back in the bayous, had possessed a vast repertoire of old pre-dark songs and had taught some of them to the skinny albino teenager.
Shibayanke, 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 Shibayanke.
Jack felt very good, relaxed, calm, ready for whatever was going to happen. Itzcoatl walked in front of him, holding a beautiful crystal skull aloft. Then came a pair of priests, one holding a blazing torch, and the other an unsheathed sword of black stone. They wore strange cloaks that seemed to have dangling arms and legs. Ahead of Jack, he saw a great pyramid of carved stone that seemed to reach toward the orange sky. The whole village stood around its base, and all of them bowed low as he appeared. The steps were steep, and Jack had to be helped toward the top of the pyramid. His legs felt wobbly, his head was swimming. The pounding of the drums drove through his skull like white-hot chisels. But though he was aware of the pain, he didn't seem to feel it. It all seemed to be happening once removed.
Drugged out of his dome. Danger he could fall clear from top to bottom.
We got that covered.
Can I go around to the back as well, please?
No, stay here. Once the shit hits the fan, then it's going to be triple action. We need all our blasters here.
Christy turned from the small gap in the bushes that had enabled her to watch the unfolding drama.
Nearly at the top. Another 10 steps.
Ryan brought the Steyr to chin level, setting the walnut stock into his shoulder, his finger reaching for the trigger. He pressed his eye to the starlight nightscope, using the laser image enhancer to give him a clearer view of his target. Jack's shock of white hair filled the sight, and Ryan adjusted upward a little to the figures on the flat apex of the pyramid, standing grouped together, all looking down at their young god. Ryan noticed that one of the black-clad priests, standing at the back, was a great deal taller than any of the others, looking to be close to 6'3", the same height as Doc Tanner. Itzcoatl had taken the center of the ceremony, as befitted his position as chief of the tribe. He stood between the two stacks of firewood, which waited only the application of a torch. Out of the corner of his eye, he noted all the priests of the village in a row. He had come up the back of the monument, passing through the small hidden room where the high priests sometimes waited in their main rituals. It contained spare sets of robes in case too much blood was spilled. After the prolonged giving of the Outlander to the older gods, he and the priests would make their way to the back of the flat top, hidden by the pall of smoke from the fires. They would return to the ground down the rear steps of the pyramid, keeping elements of the mystery from the crowd of onlookers from the village. Jack finally stood alone, swaying slightly, with the priests circling him, none of them actually laying hands on his serene person. The drug that they'd administer to him was beginning to wear off, but he still felt weak and dizzy. One by one in the gathering darkness, the priests came to him, and touched him on the heart with their fingers.
Hang on, kid.